All right, let me just confirm. Jed, are you with us?
I am, yep, made it back.
All righty, we are set and ready to roll for our Media Bits Power Hour, an educational opportunity for those of you who are selling ads in print, on your newsletter, into your website, whether your circulation is paid, controlled, or free. Let's see, paid, controlled, or free. I got it. You're in the right spot. Whether you're selling ads into your newspapers, magazines, business journals, specialty, or niche publications, you have found the right spot. We focus on those that are that you are focused on your own sales and selling success. As you are getting settled in, we're always going to encourage you, find a quiet spot, close your office door, turn off electronics, make and take notes. It's not an accident that we're not putting something on your screen. It would simply create many tasking and multitasking, all of the very best in adult education and learning. Says the more notes you make, the more notes you take, the things that you're listening to today, you will be able to immediately deploy. For those of you that sent questions in advance, we've already tucked those into. We will get to as many of those as we can during the course of our educational teleseminar. For those of you during the course that are listening live, please send your questions in, and we will also look to respond to those. With me is Jed, the founder of MediaBiz, founder and president and visionary nonetheless of MediaBiz. Jed, I always appreciate working with you. Don't get me started on the chess stuff or the Galapagos. You know where I'm going. Jed, we always love you, man. Love your support of you and your team and love being here together. How about some opening words? Tell us a little bit about MediaBiz. Some observations about things that are moving around in our space and sector, and I'll say a couple of opening words about Power Hour, and then we'll dive right into our topic about budget selling season. So the floor be yours. What's cooking?
All right. Okay, well, first of all, thanks to Ernest, who really brings a lot of knowledge and expertise and experience to these calls. I always learn a lot. Thanks for all of you who are joining us. My name is Jed Gould. I'm the president of MediaBiz, and we have been working to get ads in print publications for 20 years. We do it in a variety of different ways, but the basic premise is we want to grow print revenue. We work primarily with national advertisers, and we track the ads that we place. So we put unique phone numbers in, and we're able to show national advertisers the results that are generated as a result of print ads that they are running with us. Using this method, we've been able to drive tens of millions of dollars, maybe more back into print. Most of these are advertisers who have either no longer been using, haven't used print in the recent past, or they have vastly curtailed their print advertising spend. And so using our method, we've been able to sort of compete with online to show advertisers that print not only can compete from a price perspective, but from a results perspective, it can oftentimes outperform other mediums and generate the kinds of customers that they most want. So we're happy to work with any publication. We don't charge anything. It's a service where if you make money, we make money. And if none of us make money, then none of us make money. but it's free to use. And we're always excited to talk to publications. So if you're using us currently, thank you. And if you're not, please feel free to give us a call. Check out our website, and thank you for joining us.
Tremendous. And Jed, you so humbly described the work you do in our sector, but so for all of you to know, they have literally worked with tens of thousands of magazines. They have literally placed hundreds of thousands of ads. They have literally generated gamillions of inbound calls, ad results, and can walk and talk about from ad size to placement to print versus digital, seasonality. Jed has a wealth of information. And as he said, it costs nothing to work with MediaBiz. They simply have a pay-for-performance relationship with you and advertisers. So reach out to them. They know exactly what they're doing. And there literally is nobody in the world that I've ever seen or found over my last 23 years that does what Jed and MediaBids does. So go to MediaBids.com if you're not working with them. And, of course, those of you who do, you already know what they do from that perspective. So, Jed, thank you so much. To all of you, my name is Ernest Oriente. My company is Power Hour. Jed, as you know, I began in the advertising sales industry in 1986, launching three of my own publications. I was a leader in a billion-dollar media group. We launched Power in 1995, and today I've coached more than 2,500 ad sales teams and companies and organizations in 13 time zones around the world. Over the last 23 years, as I shared with you specifically today, we're in Canada, the Great White North, working with our Canadian clients, specifically in Montreal today as we move around. Next month, we're moving to Florida. We'll be working with clients in Florida during the month of October and then back to our corporate offices in Park City. Jed, we provide executive coaching, as you know. We love to help our clients reach and exceed their dreams and goals. We have a recruiting division. We have a search and digital side of the house. Frankly, we also help our clients buy and sell media properties. And most proudly, every single Tuesday, we host a live weekly ad sales academy. So, Jed, just like we began here, we dial in. The only difference is the line is open and we field all of those questions related to the topic of the week. This week was week number 283 weeks ago that we began from that perspective. Lastly, before we get rolling on our topic, we have three specific goals for our MediaBids Power Hour today. Goal number one, we hope to share new ideas to stretch and spur your thinking and to expand the possibilities. Number two, if there's something you hear during the course of our teleseminar that matches what you're already doing, we send you a virtual high five. That simply means what? You're already doing what matches best practices. We love that. Number three, the serendipitous. There are things Jed and myself are going to share that are going to spark something either related to this that you'll expand on or even unrelated. Anticipate that and look forward to that. We always encourage the serendipitous ideas. Jed, today we said we're going to talk about the budget selling season and our ad selling success. And Jed, this is something that together we did about 4 or 5 years ago. It's perfectly timed during this month. We do this every single August, September, October, every single week for 10 weeks with our weekly sales academy. And the reason we do that every single year is because there are specific strategies that are so vitally important this time of year. So for the purpose of all of you joining us today, we're going to give you some capsules. We're going to give you some nuggets that you can run with, things that if you're doing it, bravo, things that if you're not, lean in and go get it. Let's just step back for just a second. Those of you who are, there's sort of two camps. Those of you that work with medium to larger advertisers, in many cases, including the largest advertisers, their budget season began all the way back in middle of August. Budget boot camps at the end of August. And ever since September, lights are on and they're leaning in big time, doing their media planning and rolling it up through the month of September and October and leaning into November, December and ready for the new year. There are those that are the smaller companies that may or may not have a formal budget process. And with those particular advertisers, that's okay. You can still bring them along. Okay, look, I've sold ads to mom and pops. I've walked in and out of dry cleaners and, you know, restaurants and automotive muffler shops. I've done all that. I've walked in with the ad to proof and asked for a check at the same time. I've been around the block for a long time, and I understand what it means to have those smaller relationships. And frankly, they're thinking from week to week and paycheck to paycheck. They've got a different school of thought, but you can still bring them along to let them know, hey, this time of year, hey, what are you planning on between here and the end of the year? But for the most part of what we'll be doing here today are the companies that truly are doing the planning, that need your guidance, that you want to be a part of, and that you want to participate in from that perspective, okay? So we have that part. Number two, in my early days, I didn't have a coach working with me in the media world. I didn't know what to make of the budget selling season. Here was my cut. I didn't like it. Number one, my birthday, Jed, falls in the middle of October. I was always wrapped up in budgets. I never liked my birthday, and I would say to my wonderful family, my wonderful bride, please don't celebrate my birthday until my budget season's over, of which they learned to appreciate that I really wasn't in a very celebratory mood because I didn't understand what was going on. All right? But as time progressed, I realized that it was a very natural ebb and flow that, yes, as I'm trying to sell ads into corporate companies, they were behind the scenes doing what? Working on their budgets. They weren't as available to meet. They weren't returning my phone calls. They wouldn't give me a meeting. I didn't realize behind the scenes that they were working on exactly what we're going to talk about today. They were mapping their game plan, and they, in fact, needed things from me, and I wasn't always ready or didn't realize what was going on or didn't know how to open up the conversation and certainly didn't realize the opportunity, which is what we're going to talk about today from that perspective. So as we sort of think about, every ad is on the table. And Jed, I thought you might sort of share maybe some comments. As you, I know, work with some large advertisers, this is the time of year that they're thinking about, what am I doing between here and the end of the year, especially if I have a big fourth quarter focused on retail or consumer, and then others are focused on what? 2019's budget that they're working on. So maybe I thought you'd share a little insight of what you see related to that tied to the advertising side.
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, there's no hard and fast rules. I think you know, and everyone on the call knows. I mean, every company sort of handles it differently. You know, what we find is a lot of it is based on, you know, when different advertisers sort of see their busiest time as being, you know. So, for example, you know, Omaha Steaks, which is, you know, a big client of ours, they do a lot of their business in the fourth quarter. So, you know, they're not thinking about 2019 as much as they're thinking about, you know, December. So their big planning time is in the summer for what's coming up for the holidays. You know, others, you know, are you know, as you say, are much more focused on the calendar year. You know, and what we find is just, and I'm sure that, you know, you're gonna touch on this, but it's just, it's not only a great time to talk to people about, you know, about their budgets, but it's also, you know, by extension, it's just a great time to talk to people about their strategy and, you know, and what mm-hmm. worked over the past year and what didn't work over the past year and what they could do differently and how much it's going to cost. And so, you know, the new year sort of serves as a nice place to sort of introduce those kinds of ideas, because far too often the excuse that you get is, you know, we're locked in for the year, right? We're doing, you know, we've already planned out the year, and now it's just about execution. It's not about planning. So, you know, mm-hmm. this time of year is nice because it is more about, or at least in part, about planning.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And to Jed's point, there are some companies, Jed, I'm sure you're familiar, that actually move their calendar around because they don't want to be in budgets in the fourth quarter because it's such an important time of year. For example, in the case of Omaha Steaks, you know, this is really where they may do, you know, 50 or 60% of their rev in that fourth quarter. We've seen budgets get moved to the first quarter, or they do it in the mid-year and they do it in the second quarter. So the first piece we want to say to all of you from an action step perspective, do you know at your fingertips, every single medium to large client, the agencies that you're working with on that side, do you know where their budget cycle is? Very classically, it ends in December, starts in the new year. Specifically, publicly held companies are required to do that by the SEC, the very, very largest. But make certain you know that. Okay, back to Jed's point, because there are some, and we've coached media groups that have mid-year sale budget cycles, and Jed, there's no rhyme to the reason. That's the way they've always done it, and, you know, it sort of rolls like that. So as we go back to this point about the budget selling season, it is possible during the budget season that your ad may or may not be getting renewed next year, and you don't even know it yet, okay? There's a point to realize on the other side that you're being discussed or being added in and you don't even know it yet. But we don't want to leave any of that to chance. So part of the guidance of what we've been doing with our Academy members, first and foremost, is to close the back door to make certain we're not losing any traction or any ad renewals or any biz with our current largest advertisers. Now, that's a relative term. Okay, when you say the largest, what do we mean by that? Well, who are the top 10 or who are the top 20? If you were to have a visual graph of the largest advertisers, those in the middle and those that are small, you would see that it slopes pretty quickly. For some of you, it might be three that are large. For some, that'll be 303 that are large. There's nothing objective to it. It's entirely subjective based on the average price of your ads and the length of agreement and so forth. Okay. So that's an important part. But the one thing, Jed, that I was never given the insight is that, so maybe decision makers weren't as active, maybe they weren't as available, but I was getting sort of these, what I call stray or spray calls. Hey, Ernest, I'm reaching out to you. You once said your circulation is what? Hey, Ernest, I was touching base. You know, I know we talked earlier about, you know, a campaign, but I wanted to double check. What again is that rate card for that double truck? Plus, I also want to be on the website. Can we talk about that? Or, hey, Ernest, you know, your competitor was just here and they said this about you and your media team or this about you and your media solutions. And I kind of took him those calls, Jed, as just one-offs. I was like, hey, let me answer your question. Let me be helpful. Let me explain. But I didn't realize that what was going on is that they were sitting behind closed doors. They were sitting there as a marketing group. They were sitting with their business leaders and they were mapping their game plan. And I didn't give enough credit to that. And I certainly wasn't ready for those competitive conversations. Okay. So what we want all of you to know is those fast stray or spray calls are meaningful. There's something going on. They could be, hey, could you join us? You know, we got a marketing meeting on Thursday. Could you come join us? Or, hey, can I put you up on speaker? Or, hey, I'm going to send you an email and I'm going to copy two people on my team. All of those are synced up to this. Okay. Now there's a counterpoint to this for just a moment, because we sometimes, Jed, bump into that point of, you know, now it's March and, you know, you reach out to an advertiser and a company and they go, hey, I'm sorry, you're not in the budget. All right. And we know, you know, we know that there's more smoke than fire to that, that there is that because if you really think of any of your current advertisers actually have called you to ask the question, one, when does my agreement renew? Two, what is my increase going to be? If they're not actually doing that, then frankly, the piece called you're not in the budget is actually just smoke. Okay, we've learned that for a long, long time. Okay, so and we've always had an agreement that whatever's in the sandwich, here's my rev line, here's my profit line, and in the middle are all the things that I deploy, including my marketing and advertising budget, and I can move that up or down as long as I'm delivering the top and the bottom. There's a lot more flexibility, but I don't want to digress to that. I just want all of you to know, and we want you to know, that you've got to be prepared for these fast and quick calls. And so if an advertiser or an agency or a decision maker or a key prospect calls you up and says, hey, but I was told or I heard your circulation is this and that you're not as good as competitor B, or, you know, competitor C was in here today talking about X and Y, but hey, Ernest, is that true? Or what, you know, what is it you are doing? Maybe I misunderstood. So, you know, when you have those, you have to be ready to, like we talk about here, Jed, we talk about our side-by-side media comparisons. We've been talking about this for two decades. You've got to have that at your fingertips. It's got to be current and ready to go. And then you can go click, send, and say, hey, Mary, what an interesting point. Mary, with your permission, could I send you an email? And I'll walk you through the differences between me and Media Group B, or me and the circ of Media Group C, or Magazines D, or Business Journal E, whatever it might be. Have that at your fingertips. It's got to be current and ready to go. And every 2 or 3 years, we come back and focus on that topic of media, the side-by-side media comparisons. For those of you who are in our Tuesday Academy, we cover that throughout the course of the year. It's vitally important. There are other things that you want to have ready to go and at your fingertips. For example, your media kit, but not just your media kit, but is it current and up to date? How about your case studies? How about your testimonials? How about your stats and data about your SEO or about your newsletter subscribers or the improvement of this year versus last year or this quarter versus last year? You know, what is it you're doing? Not just your stock, here's my story, here are my rates, but what else is in there that really shares your big story, your big news? What is your big news? What is the biggest thing? If you gave me in one sentence, and you sent an email to Jed and I in one sentence, the one thing I'm most proud of in 2018 is what? Blank. One sentence. What would it be? 2019, the single biggest goal we're looking to accomplish is what? Boom. One sentence. All right. Where are you playing big? Because while we're talking about, you know, your advertisers and they're making decisions, what decisions did you make this time last year that impacted your 2018? Where did you grow your paid CERC by 25%? Where were your strategic alliances that gave you more visibility with your manufacturers than ever before that catapults you in front of competitors? Where did you, if you're on the free CERC side, increase your visibility at drugstores, if that made a difference, or grocery stores, or outdoor street racks? If you have the edit on the editorial side, what have you done editorially to make it more engaging? And of course, Jed, to warm your heart, of course, what are we doing to what? Track and measure our ad results every step of the way. And we're going to talk more about that. But these are the things that we ask you to think about. When you think about your advertisers, your ad agencies, and your marketing people that are thinking about the end of the year, thinking about next year, focused on their budget, tying that into their performance goals, their own career paths, they're making those decisions. But we're challenging you at the same time to realize there's a selling opportunity, and B, the challenge that we give to each of you and all of you is what? Where are your big opportunities that you're going to drive in the market that are a significant part of what we call disrupt the status quo? You have how many new subscribers? I'm sorry, what was that happened to your website or your newsletter? Or you have an alliance, an exclusive alliance with whom and why? Hang on, what does that mean? If you don't have those disruptive moments, then you don't have enough to stop a decision maker in their track and for them to engage with you. Jed, some comments about these opening words as we sort of think about the budget season.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, the thing that was crossing my mind was that, you know, that really the time to start is as early as possible. I mean, the time to start is now, right? Because mm-hmm. because it's probably pretty unusual, or at least certainly it doesn't work with everyone, where, you know, they all sit around a table and they say, okay, let's plan our budget, right? It's more of something that they probably are gathering information as they go along, and then they say, you know, here's our budget for the next year, but there isn't some, you know, I think for a lot of companies, there isn't some big formal meeting where it's, you know, an official budget and we're going to talk to all of our vendors and find out their pros and cons. They sort of have a sense of whether they want to keep doing something or not keep doing something. And that's why, you know, that's why a lot of the great examples that you gave, you know, are things that you probably should be alerting potential clients of as you go. Right. I mean, because mm-hmm. it's not enough just to get to December and say, you know, our website traffic is up 30%. Right. I mean, you want to be telling these people, telling potential clients what you can do for them, you know, as time goes on, because then they get to that moment where they have to make a decision. Mm-hmm. And I think they're more likely to keep mm-hmm. you in mind.
No, that's right. Valid point. And so let's tuck in a few questions, if we could, and then we'll move to our second key point. Angela in Missouri asks, is CRM worth the investment? CRM, of course, being a database, a customer or client relationship manager. And Angela, the answer is simply yes. In the old days, if you weren't a big company like Xerox or Pitney Bowes or Motorola or Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, you used to cost millions and millions of dollars. For that's no longer the case. For less than $100, you can have a beautiful tool. There's all kinds. Just Google for top 20 best CRMs, pilot them, and you will find a wonderful solution. I really, though, wanted to address the other question that you had, Angela, how to sell without bugging, okay? There is no bugging if you're providing value and valuable resources. Specifically, you're working in the women's magazine space. So the kinds of things you might be messaging is new research about your readers, or that you're going to be at an upcoming conference, or an article that you want to share, or a case study about working with your advertisers. You have a very compelling story, Angela, and none of that includes bugging. Bugging would be, hi, this is Angela. Would you like to buy an ad? Hi, this is Angela. My deadline is. That's bugging. That's not the way to come from. So come from the side of education. Be a thought leader. Bring information that's timely and insightful from that perspective. Let's see.
Ernest, one thing. Question? Can I just
yeah,
ask,
please.
Can I just ask
yeah,
something
please.
Quickly on CRM?
Yeah, please.
Because I've made about every mistake with CRM software that there is to make. The one thing I'll tell you is that with CRM software, it's only good if you can ensure that everyone in your office is going to use it, right? Because because it breaks down and it's not worth it if you've got, you know, two people who really like their Excel spreadsheet system of keeping track of people and two other people who, you know, like index cards, and, you know, you and one other guy are using the CRM software. it doesn't work, right? You have to have sort of 100% buy-in, and it's painful, right? In the beginning, it's painful because everyone has their own personal system. But once you get people to sort of fully embrace it, it can be really a hugely powerful tool. But that transition time, don't underestimate how difficult that can be.
Absolutely. And so as long as, Jed, you're on a roll, let's talk about Mike's note from Texas, who says, how effective is the pay-per-call? Please, Jed, could you feel that from Mike? Is there something you might like to see, a nugget?
So what pay-per-call is, you know, it's all called lots of different things, you know, response-based ads, per inquiry. But basically it's the idea that you run an ad, and then the advertiser pays for something other than space, right? So in some cases, the advertiser is paying for a phone call. In other cases, the advertiser is paying for a lead, which means that a certain amount of information is captured from a caller. In still other cases, an advertiser is paying for a sale, right? And so this has become popular, as you can imagine, with advertisers, primarily because this is how the internet is charging for ads. You know, this is how Google does it. This is how, you know, Yahoo does it. This is how every ad network out there does it, right? They're charging for clicks, their calls, their sales. And so we do a lot of it because it's the best way that we can come up with to get big national advertisers to spend a lot of money in print. And there are times when it can work extremely well. It works, you know, where it can generate results that are equal to or greater than rate cards. And then there are other times where it fails miserably to the extent that it does not, you know, come close to covering a rate card price. And so the challenge is, per response advertising is worth doing if the product or service that you're advertising is, you think it's going to resonate with your readers. And, you know, and the question is, you know, because if you're just running an ad for the sake of running an ad, you know, there's no guarantee that it's going to do well. But if you're running an ad that you have reason to believe is going to do well, then the odds go way, way, way up. And that's where it becomes tricky for us. And that's where, you've got a pulse of your readers. Know better what your readers are looking for. We're constantly surprised by lots of different things. You know, I mean, Omaha Steaks is incredibly popular in some communities, and it's not popular at all in other communities. You know, Dish Network outperforms DirecTV in some places, but people love DirecTV in other places. you know. And so it's very difficult to sort of sit here and say, you know, if you run a certain ad, you will produce a certain amount of income. But it's trial and error. But the thing that's nice about it is it generates data, which you can then use to learn about what your readers are looking for. So, you know, I think it's more than just, you know, is it worthwhile monetarily? The question is, you know, is it worthwhile monetarily, and will you learn something that you can then, you know, make worthwhile monetarily?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Certainly valid points. And Angela and Mike, specifically to the two of you, we hope that our responses are helping you. But of course, as we know, Jed, from our years and years of experience, when someone asks a question, it benefits lots of those that are joining us and those who will also listen once we finish up this teleseminar. And we'll continue to field questions as well as we go forward. For those of you that are listening live that have a specific question, simply just hit reply to the confirmation that brought you here, or send an email to ernest@powerhour.com, and our team will sift, sort, and put that in front of Jed and myself. Jed, the second point that we wanted to talk about and that we promised that we would address are, what are the four most important budget-related questions to ask? So are there more than four? Of course. But sort of like a compass, Jed and I said, hey, what are the big four? And everything else is a derivative. It's like saying on a compass, I'm going to go north to Alaska, but I may go 2 degrees northwest, or I may go 4 degrees northeast. So everything is a derivative of this. And certainly the first and foremost is, what is your budget planning cycle? Being very transparent. You know, large companies, you can assume it. But then, just like Jed shared with Omaha Steaks, they're so busy in the fourth quarter, don't assume that it's the classic end of December, start again in January, okay? Certainly don't miss that piece. Some of the largest organizations even have an RFP cycle, request for proposal, that you're going to have to complete, and that could have been done in April. So truly, if you didn't respond in April, you may not have till next April to even have that conversation. And then, of course, how can I be tucked in? How direct can we be? I want to be tucked into your budget process. I want to know. So the first question is, what's your cycle and how can I be tucked in? Number two, what are your ad result expectations? Jed, this syncs right up to what you just were talking about. What are the expectations when you place an ad in print, when you put an ad in a newsletter, when you put an ad on a website? What is the cost per thousand you're looking for? What is the cost per call, cost per click, cost per email, cost per phone call, cost per sale or transaction? All those cost per sync right up here when we talk about, they're all derivatives of the sort of compass of, what are the expectations I need to know so that I know when we deliver, we've done the job. I know if we're not, we're going to make an adjustment to that. It might be what's in the ad. It might be the placement of the ad. It might be what the offerings are. It might be seasonality, all those other things. These are variables to the second question. Number three. How and will you measure ad results? Jed, I teased you at the top of the hour saying we're going to talk about that. how will we measure ad results? And then the fourth, and then we'll pause, and that is, would you be open if you could keep your same budget and add me in? If you could keep the same budget, if you have five media sources and you're spending $5,000 total across those five sources, if you could keep that and make it the six, would you be willing to do that? There's our compass, the four big questions. Now, Jed, I'd love to hear from you, from your insight, talking about how do you measure ad results? How do you tie in ad expectations? I know you got a snippet waiting for us.
What? There's lots of ways to track the results of ads. Obviously, you know, print has sort of an inherent disadvantage in the sense that, you know, it's easier to do online than it is to do in the physical copy of a print publication. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. We use thousands of phone numbers every week, and what we do is we put a unique phone number, unique 800 number into every ad that we place. We're then able to see who's calling, how long they spend on the phone, where they're calling from, You know, and then depending on some other things, we can go deeper into the transaction if we're getting information back from the call center, like, you know, they were transferred or they made a sale. So we can get a lot of information based on just one phone call. Even just putting a straight 800 number on top of your client's number, it will give you a lot of information. It'll tell you how many people called. It'll tell you how long they spent on the phone. And what Ernest was mentioning earlier was understanding the expectations of an advertiser is if you can get out of an advertiser, you know, something along the lines of, you know, how many calls they get before someone makes, you know, before someone buys, or, you know, what percentage of calls turn into sales, or how many times does someone have to walk in their front door before they buy? You'll find that most decent-sized retailers will have a pretty good sense of that, you know, whether it's a car dealership or a carpet salesman, right? They're going to be able to tell you, look, we can, you know, if we get 10 people in here, we're probably going to make 3 sales, right? So if you're able to then quantify that you've driven, you know, a certain number of customers to them, you can start making assumptions about how much your ad has generated for them. And in my experience, this has changed ad selling maybe more than anything I've ever encountered. And that is that if you can start to get to a situation with your clients where you're actually able to tell them what you are generating for them, it no longer becomes a conversation about whether or not they're going to renew and whether or not, you know, the ad was worth it and are they paying too much and all that stuff, the kind of objections that normal advertisers normally throw up. Really what it does is it becomes a conversation about, you know, what can we do to generate more sales, right? Do we need a bigger ad? Or maybe it should be more smaller ads, or maybe the offer in the ad should be more aggressive or less aggressive. Whatever it might be, right, you take a different seat with that advertiser than just someone who is in there to sell something specifically, you know, to sell real estate in a newspaper or a magazine without any regard for how that ad is doing for that advertiser. You know, here at MediaBits, we take it a step further and we actually charge the advertiser and pay publications based on the response that's generated. I'm not even suggesting you need to go that far. I'm just suggesting that by knowing this information, you can sell conventionally. You can sell, you know, ad space for a set price much more effectively if you're able to get this information, to gather even just a small amount of information on the response that's generated from an ad, and then relay that to the advertiser and tell them exactly what, you know, based on your estimations, what their ad is generating for you or for them, what the ad in your publication is generating for them. You know, even if the AdWords fail, you know, by everyone's standards, it's a much better conversation to be able to say, this didn't generate anything, we need to change the offer, than it is to have to walk in there and just hope that they buy another ad. We use phone numbers, you can use URLs, you can use text messages, you can use, there's a lot of different ways of doing it. Phone numbers are cheap and they're easy, and they're very, very easy to track. But there are other ways as well.
And so what you're listening to Jed talk about ad expectation, ad results, the tracking of, it is absolutely paramount that you have that piece, that you're able to say to an advertiser, hey, your ad results are up 12% this year versus last year. You know, the ability to be able to say, gee, you brought in 646 ad forms or 427 clicks or 4,020 came to this designated landing page. All of those numbers and specifics are vitally important in order to be successful in media and ad sales. And this is not a new conversation. This is something that Jed and myself have been talking about for the last 10 plus years. And this kind of tracking has been out there for the last 20 years. So this is not only mandatory in the way that you're selling ads and being able to justify on the back end, but it's literally required in the world of Google, in the world of pay-per-click ads, in the world of Facebook ads. They're all tracking. They're tracking every click, every phone number, every ad result. And if you want to remind yourself of that, go look at the price today of Facebook. Go look at yourself at the price of Google. And frankly, those two pipes are controlling a significant portion of what's happening. The rest of it is for us. And each of you have an opportunity to sell and tell your story related to that. So the four key questions: what is your budget cycle going to be tucked in? What are the ad result expectations? How do you measure ad results? And then lastly, will you tuck me in if we keep the same budget? Now, each of those, just so you know, have been specifically individual educational teleseminars that we have done. And each of those questions have also been topics that we cover during our weekly Tuesday Sales Academy. So these are near and dear to our hearts from that perspective. Jed, let's tuck in a couple of additional questions. Let's see here. We have one from Brenda, and Brenda's in California. And she says, what are the most important budget-related questions to ask key buyers who make advertising decisions? We hope what we've covered has been spot on for you. But then you asked part two, and you said, what is there a way to approach different buyers? Now, that was interesting. So I'm going to give you just some laser coaching related to that. There are buying styles. There are specifically four. So in a little capsule, there are those who buy very impatient and others who are more methodical and are impatient. Okay. So you have those that are very impatient, say, let's get that going. And I have a good feeling and we're putting an ad with you. Great. And there's others that are really want to walk through and break down each of the steps. There are those in terms of their buying styles. There are those who are more people friendly and those who are more people reserved. Think introvert versus extrovert. Key component here. We do a lot of coaching around matching and mirroring. Please do not try to warm up someone who's more reserved and introverted. You will fail. Okay. If someone's more quiet and reserved, then you match and mirror their speaking style. You use less emotion, less hand signaling and movement, and you stay more calm. Match and mirror in that particular style. The third style that that will help you, Brenda, those who are single taskers versus multitaskers. Generally, those who are more patient are also more single taskers, more methodical. Think those who are in HR or those who are in accounting or finance are step by step by step, including those who are also reading your agreement if it's there's a legal component, okay, versus those who are more multitaskers. And then lastly, there are those that are highly attentive to detail, dot every I and cross their T, and there are those who wade through those details. Those are the classic styles in the sort of extremes on both sides. We are all a combination of two of those that drive us, and two that are lesser dominant, okay, of those four particular styles. So I'm hoping that that gives you a very quick capsule, Brenda, related to that. And thank you for that question. Jed, we have a question from Debbie. And Debbie asks, how do you determine the ROI of print advertising?
So
ROI of print advertising.
The ROI, mm-hmm. return on investment, you know, is generally, you know, just to break it down in a quick math equation, mm-hmm. right? You would say, you know, cost versus the return. So if an ad costs $100 and it generates, you know, and it generates $200 worth of sales, mm-hmm. you know, your return on investment would be 2. Mm-hmm. So your 2x, right? So but the key component in understanding the ROI and one of the reasons why a lot of print outlets fail at determining the ROI is you need to be able to accurately track the results that are generated from an ad to actual sales. And this is something that, shockingly few people do. right? And it's something that can really make a big difference. You know, if you think about your average ad that's running in your pages, you know, and you go in and you ask the business owner if what the ROI is, they will have no idea, because they really don't know what customers were generated as a result of the ad that was running. So very often they will make assumptions based on what people tell them, which is a really bad way of doing it. They'll make assumptions based on you know, how many people have called or how many people have come in the days that follow an ad running. And these are all, you know, extremely poor and inaccurate ways of trying to determine how much revenue an ad has generated. So that's why we vastly prefer, putting some direct tracking mechanism into an ad, because that allows you to understand specifically. One quick story, and I've pulled this in other calls, but I think it's been a while. So, you know, we did a test at one point with Pro Flowers, where we put where they asked. So we put unique phone numbers in every ad. We knew exactly where people were calling from, but the operators at Pro Flowers asked people where they heard about Pro Flowers. About half the people who called and were calling and could only get the number from a print ad, about half the people who called said that they heard about Pro Flowers on TV, right? Even though they were calling a number that only appeared in print, right? And only appeared in that ad.
Mm-hmm.
So it just goes to show you that people, you know, people are not necessarily thinking to themselves, I'm looking at an ad, I'm calling a number. Well, of course, I learned about it from, you know, the Herald magazine or, you know, whatever it might be, right?
Mm-hmm.
People are thinking in a much less specific way, maybe where they first learned about Pro Flowers, or, you know, they remember that commercial, or who the hell knows. But the point is that it's an inaccurate system to just ask someone, and that's why it's very difficult to determine ROI if you don't have an accurate tracking mechanism.
Perfect. And so Debbie and Brenda, again, great questions. Individually, we're hoping we're helping the two of you, but to all of you that are listening to Jed and my responses to these, we're hoping that benefits you, and likewise to the serendipitous, maybe is sparking other thoughts and ideas. Let's come around the bed, Jed, before the top of the hour, and let's talk about selling with a bit of splash and creativity and outside the box, how that ties in. Then we'll see if we have a little window. Maybe we'll field one or two more quick questions before the top of the hour. During the budget selling season, there is room for some creativity. We have seen it myself, certainly in my corporate days, and we've seen it be a benefit of our clients all over the world. This is the time of year that we look to do some things that are memorable. We look to break the ice. We look to have a little fun. We look to be creative. If you have a decision maker who, loves horse racing, and you're in San Diego, maybe you take him or her, you know, and invite them to go opening day at Del Mar, for example. Or maybe there is someone who loves to golf or play tennis. There are those kind of entertainment things. But even simpler, we've had wonderful examples of bringing or having delivered a pie with a little marketing note that says, gee, we'd love a slice of your business going into 2019. Or another little fun, creative note that might be down the path of, listen, we know you're behind the scenes working on your budgets, and we hope you enjoy the pie that we're delivering for you with a smile. Something easy. We've seen apple cider, for example. You know, we hope your 2019 is, you know, exciting and you've got wonderful things to celebrate going into the new year. Or the reverse. Gee, we've more than doubled our advertisers this year. We'd love to toast some apple cider with you and your marketing team and share some of the things that we've done. I've seen plants delivered. We love to grow together. All kinds of creative and memorable things. Some are specific to the individual and their interests. Some are food related or something that is just sort of a way to lighten things up a little bit. Some of you have delivered, for example, budget survival kits. And I've seen all kinds of things that go in there, but there's generally a lot of aspirin, among other things. The point is, be memorable, be creative. Why? Because it just gives us a way to have a little fun, okay? It gives us a way to separate ourselves. It gives us a way for a decision maker to go, hey, Ernest, look, hey, Jed, last year you sent me the cherry pie, and this year you're sending me the cider, but you really got me, you know, when you sent the little plant, it's on my desk, you got a meeting, let's go, okay? For those of you that we often will hear, hey, listen, I work by phone, we're not in the local market. Remember, anything, anywhere can be delivered. That's not a limitation. For those of you local, whether you do it or whether you pay someone to do it, the point is in that it creates a fun environment. Be creative. Think outside the box. Look for something that's memorable from that specific area. Most importantly, during this time of year, there's lots going on in our space and sector, and you get the opportunity to set yourself apart. Jed, let's see if we can weave in. There were a couple of additional questions before we wrap up that I wanted to field. Okay, let's see. Maureen, this was a question about what if they say they're only doing social media advertising and not print? And Jed, I just don't want to step over this point. You often and have shared consistently about the value of print by comparison to the value of the digital side, and even how smart and sharp agencies come to you and pay you lots more for those print ads versus the digital. Could you please address that piece? And then I'm going to back in and share another part related to that. Could you say a few words about that?
Sure. So first of all, no one advertises on Facebook because they love Facebook, right? I mean, Facebook has no sort of, you know, endearing value in terms of, you know, how people are looking at it. You know, people may advertise in the local newspaper or in a magazine because they believe in the message, they believe in what that publication is doing. But no one is sitting there saying to themselves, you know what, I just love Facebook, so I want to support Facebook. The reason why they're doing social media is because they believe it works. And the reason why they believe it works is because social media has all sorts of cool little dashboards that they give their advertisers. So you can see exactly how much you spent. You can see exactly how much you have in your budget. You can see how many people clicked on it, and it feels really good, right? Because you can sit there and you can say, oh my gosh, you know, 150 people clicked on this while I was, you know, watching TV tonight. You know, isn't this wonderful? I'm going to be, you know, my marketing is working tremendously. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, going back to the ROI question, the ROI on social media advertising is almost immeasurably low, right? It is so low that people talk about it in, you know, into the thousands of a percentage point, because, you know, you're getting, you know, you might be getting 0.001% of your clicks turn into sales. We once did a test for ProFlowers again. They're our guinea pig. We once did a test for ProFlowers where we ran an ad on a very, very popular mobile ad network. We spent $25,000 worth of advertising two or three days before Valentine's Day. We spent $25,000 worth of mobile advertising in about 4 hours, right, between about 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It generated something like 1,500, 2,000 phone calls. It was a huge number of phone calls that were generated in this very, very short amount of time. Those 2,000 phone calls generated, and I'm not making this up, it generated two sales for $19.99 flowers, right? This is just an example, and there's lots and lots of other examples of people who get burned by the fact that social media is great for generating clicks. It's great for generating you know, in some cases, calls and eyeballs, but it is not great for generating sales. It's not, it's much different than print. The return rate on print, what we see sort of across all, you know, all campaigns and very, very different types of campaigns is about 40%. So 40% of the people who respond to a print ad are actually buying, right? They're making a purchase. Whereas, you know, again, less than 1% of the people who are responding to social media campaigns are, you know, are actually buying. So I think that if you're going to, so for the person who's doing social media and saying that we're only doing social media, I mean, you know, short of, you know, a retailer who's selling, you know, I don't know, like, you know, disposable tattoos or something, whatever would work really well on social media and wouldn't work on print. I mean, short of that, really what they're telling you is, I don't understand how well print can work. And what you need to do is show them, right? You need to say to them, look, for every $100 you spend on social media, you might be bringing in a dollar, maybe. If you're bringing in a dollar, you're doing well. For every $100 you spend on print, right, you're going to be bringing in, you know, a multiple of that because our close rate is so much higher, right? And so that's really where the rubber meets the road, you know? That's what advertisers should care about, you know? But again, what you're up against is really cool-looking dashboards, really fun interfaces, almost like a video game, right, that allow you to throw your money around in ways that that feel and look really good. And that's, you know, that's something that is very appealing to a lot of advertisers.
And so, Maureen, this is Ernest. And first off, I want to just pause because, Maureen, you come frequently to our MediaBits Power Hour. You always come to learn, you pose questions, and we so hope that our responses are helpful. And I just want to say thank you to you and so many of you that come consistently month after month and year after year. And we're always here, Maureen, to help you. And you can hear the passion from Jed. You will always hear the passion from me likewise. There is a way to win. It's paint by numbers, but you have to have every one of those numbers lined up. It's kind of like a chain link that if every chain is all linked together, you win. And if there's a broken chain in there, like we talked about tracking, for example, or knowing expectations or setting yourself apart or your USP or your alliances, then in those broken chains, it becomes more challenging. Which brings us to the last question, Jed, that I'm just going to tuck in and give a laser response to Vera. Vera, this is your first time joining us. Thank you. In Illinois, we're glad that you're here. And you're question was simply about overcoming objections, okay? And so here's the piece on that. Overcoming objections is like the math formula, 1 + 1 + 1 = 3, okay? That you win when you understand what 1 + 1 + 1 is. What are the objections? What are the frequently asked questions? How does my media kit and media story address that? How do I track results on the other side? Where are my testimonials and case studies that validate it? It is a formula, just like we were sharing related to Maureen. It's like a chain link, but without the links in between, it becomes very difficult, in some cases very challenging to accomplish your goals unless you have all of those chains in alignment. You'll hear that consistently from myself and Jed. You need all the pieces to win. When you have all the pieces in place, we don't expect to go in and close one of four sales presentations or one of three or even one of two. We go into every single presentation expecting that that's ours. And when you have that level of confidence, then you win every single time. In our Tuesday Academy, Jed, this past week, we did a little visual with all of the Academy members. We were on the call just like this. The only difference is they were live and interacting with me. And I said, I want all of you to stand up. I want you to feel and roll back just very gently on your heels. Feel that. Now standing forward as well, roll forward very gently to the ball of your foot. Notice how small that movement is. The difference between being on your heels and being in the defense with objections is not where we come from. We lean to forward, that subtle shift, and we're up on the ball of our foot and up on our toes, winning every step of the way. Okay? Jed, we're coming up right at the top of the hour. We have covered so much ground. Thank you, as always, to you and your team for all the work that we do behind the scenes to make these available for those of you that are joining us. Thank you. I always want to encourage each and all of you to come into Media Bids, see the wonderful work that Jed and his team are doing. They know exactly how to help sell more ads into your publications, how to bring you additional revenue you would not have imagined. And the other sort of extra piece is you're going to have higher profile advertisers, which helps you sell more higher profile advertisers. So come into MediaBids.com. For those of you that already work with Jed and his team, you know exactly what they do and deliver. Last but not least, come into Power Hour, our site, PowerHour.com. We've done this for 23 years with clients all over the world. We love helping media and ad sales teams step by step, not only build that chain, but have that chain of success. Jed, how about some closing words before we wrap up for today?
Thanks. Thanks to everyone who joined us. Thanks for the great questions. Most of all, thanks to Ernest for bringing the vast majority of the knowledge of this phone call, so I appreciate it and look forward to talking to everyone again next month.
Jed, I appreciate your kind words about the knowledge, but I have to tell you, when you speak, I listen, baby. I love you, man. To each of you and all of you, whenever Jed leans in, you hear the deep passion. Jed and myself, more than 50-plus years we've been around this space. We love the media world. Jed, thank you so much for your kind words. To each of you and all of you, make it a fabulous day, and let us know if we can help and support you and your team's success. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you.